I'm Arun Vanagopal, in for Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. Last week, actor Chadwick Boseman died at the age of 43 after a four-year battle with colon cancer. He was a hero on and off the screen, especially for kids of color, perhaps best known for bringing to life Black Panther. His death shocked celebrities and fans alike and put a spotlight on colon cancer, the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the U.S., and as with so many diseases, colon cancer is one that disproportionately affects the Black community in this country.
Black men have a 24% higher chance of getting colon cancer than white men and a 47% higher chance of dying from it, whereas Black women have a 19% higher chance of getting it and a 34% higher chance of dying from it.
Dr. Charles Rogers is an assistant professor at the University of Utah's School of Medicine and associate member of the Huntsman Cancer Institute. He's been studying this health disparity for years. For him, this issue is also personal.
So it was in the fall of 2009 that my aunt Joanne was misdiagnosed 3 to 6 times before she was diagnosed with stage 4 at 52 years of age. So for those who may not be aware, colorectal cancer, with screening stage 0, 1, you have a 90%+ chance of survival. But stage 4, like my aunt, less than 10%.
Dr. Rogers says there's not one thing that explains why Black people, like his aunt, are at greater risk. There are several possible factors at play, including rates of screening for colon cancer.
It's estimated that 19% of the mortality disparity between Black men and women is attributed to lower screening, 30% of that being lower stage-specific survival. In my personal opinion, I would imagine that it relates to some of the things that are risk factors for CRC, whether it be, you know, being obese or a lack of physical activity, you know, smoking, alcohol consumption regularly. These are the areas where Black men specifically tend to be in the top. So I would say that those are potential factors, in addition to poor patient-provider communication, fatalism, racism. Family history is definitely a factor that should be considered. Generally speaking, if you have a family history of colorectal cancer, you should get screened at age 40 or 10 years before the individual in your family that got diagnosed.
What are the most common symptoms of colon cancer, the things that people need to be looking out for?
Yeah, so a few include a change in bowel habits that lasts for more than a few days. So this could be diarrhea, constipation. Definitely if your stool the size of a pen or a pencil, that's not normal. Feeling that you have the need to have a bowel movement, you aren't able to do some. Bleeding from your rectum, dark stools, blood in your stool, long-lasting cramping or belly pain, fatigue, as well as unintended weight loss.
Are there any lifestyle changes that people should consider in order to minimize or lessen the chance of colon cancer?
Absolutely. Individuals can work on reducing their smoking. They can improve their diets to make sure that their diets aren't high in fat or of red or processed meats. They can become more physically active. Those are some of the key things to consider.
And how often does someone need to get screened?
So how often someone gets screened depends on the type of screening that they have, as well as the recommendation for their provider. So, you know, the best screening is the one that gets done. But in terms of screening, if you get a stool exam, those are less expensive. Those are definitely something we can consider in light of COVID, you know, for individuals who may not be comfortable going to a provider yet. You know, you're simply taking a smear of your stool and you can do this in the privacy of your own home. It's less invasive than a colonoscopy. But with this type of exam, individuals have to get it annually. Whereas the gold standard that most individuals hear about is a colonoscopy, that, you know, may be the case that you have to take that every 10 years. But depending on what your provider finds, or if you have a family history, it could be that, you know, you're actually recommended to take one every 3 years. It just depends.
So you have some pretty innovative approaches, how you get out there in the community and have these conversations. Tell us a little about that.
If you think about all the medical mistrust that is stemming from historical things that have happened in history, whether it be Henrietta Lacks or the Tuskegee study, for me as a community engaged researcher, it's very, very important for me to go where the people are. So one of my key studies is called Cutting CRC, like cutting hair. And CRC is an acronym for colorectal cancer. And so this is really focused on developing a barbershop-based intervention on masculinity barriers to medical care, a number of psychosocial factors, including knowledge, social support, attitudes, those social determinants of health we may take for granted, such as if you have health insurance, if you have a job, where you live, et cetera. And I'm doing this work in Utah, where I'm based, Minnesota, where I have done quite a bit of work previously, as well as Ohio.
barbershops are really kind of a safe space for a lot of people who gravitate to them maybe week in or month in, month out for years. What have you learned over the course of doing this work that you didn't necessarily know when you started out doing it?
I'm bald now, so I don't have hair. But prior to having hair, you would go to the barber weekly, biweekly, and barbers tend to have an average relationship with their clients of about 7 years. So that being considered, barbers may know more about their clients than their significant other, or if it was someone younger, you know, their mother or father may. So for me, the barbers have a lot of power in their hands where they can really influence behavior change each and every time they connect with their clients. So if we think about it, it relates to colon cancer screening, which can be a sensitive topic, barbers can really, really potentially make a change in the individual's behavior. We also think about the culture of a barbershop. It's a safe place for men. It's very key to also think about other races you can reach the people. In light of COVID, we've had to be very strategic in terms of being really aggressive with using social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. But ultimately, to me, you have to get the feedback of the community in terms of the best way to reach people. Like if you look at any of my marketing materials, you'll see that my face is on there. Mm-hmm. And that's not because I'm trying to publicize myself, but it's because the community informed me that, you know, for example, in Utah, there's never been a black male doing this type of work. So it's very key for the community to see my face everywhere, because that can definitely build rapport and trust in the work that I'm doing.
When we consider racial health disparities in general, what are the problems that we can most immediately address?
We have to have policy in place such that providers who are aware that, you know, we as blacks get the disease earlier in a more advanced stages, they can be more aggressive in recommending screening, even if it's not what is actually recommended. Providers definitely need to take the time to be more genuine and or take the time to actually build rapport with their clients, specifically black people, considering the mistrust that I've mentioned earlier, which is rampant in the black community. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few recommendations that I have.
Dr. Charles Rogers is assistant professor at the University of Utah School of Medicine and associate member of the Huntsman Cancer Institute. Dr. Rogers, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.